There are different things that inspire us each week when we study and try to figure out what it is that we're going to talk about, what the topic's going to be. So this week, the inspiration were Yeshiva Bachram who were over my house last Shabbos. And Yeshiva Bachram have a tendency of never learning Chumash. I guess that's the tendency. And when they do learn, then they learn in very interesting ways. So that's all that I'll leave it at that. I think that, you know, in my own learning, there was a time that I had to actually learn something, and that was called Chumash without Rashi. Because the default when you learn Yeshiva is Chumash and Rashi. And then you actually really have to work on this, to read what the Chumash said, and as opposed to what Rashi says. Now, this is in no way, shape, or form meant to take away from the contribution of Rashi. I am somewhat, I'll start that again. I do suspect that when Rashi uses the word pshat, he may not think that pshat means what some of us mean, because, and for that matter, I think whenever learning any of the Rishonim, and for that matter, a lot of the Achronim, their concept of pshat may not be what our concept of pshat is. And it certainly is going to be the case when one looks at the Rashbam versus Rashi, and Rashbam in his discussions that he tells us that he had with his grandfather, and the Ibn Ezra and the Ramban for that matter, they all have different concepts of what they think pshat is. So we've discussed this before, but I'm just going to say this very, very quickly. Pshat, I don't think, according to anybody, is going to be a literal interpretation of the text. Pshat more likely is going to be a contextual interpretation of the text. Contextual interpretation then may depend on what is your context or how broad is your context. So we'll just start that for a moment. Let's now begin, and we will talk about darkness. This could be like a Springsteen album or something, right? Okay. Good, good, good. We see who's as old as me. So, source number one. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe netei yadcha al hashamayim v'hi choshech al eretz Mitzrayim. And Moshe was instructed, so those of us who have not paid attention along the way, when it comes to the plagues, as Rabbi Yehuda told us, we can divide them into 3, 3, and 3, or 3, 3, and 4. But when we make that division, there's actually an educational point, or more than just educational, there's actually a system going on. This is not merely a mnemonic. This is not merely a method in order to memorize what the text says or what the plagues are. There is a system. So the first plague every time, and you're gonna have your homework. I'm not gonna do this for you. Or you can buy my book, then I will do it for you. One is you can look at the first plague, and the first, the fourth, and the seventh. There is something in common with all of those. And then the second, and the fourth, and the eighth. There is something in common with those. I have to say more. When Rabbi Yehuda says you divide them, right? Datsach, dam tzvedei akinim. And then he further divides them. So what you do is you make a list. You do 3, 3, 3, and 1. I know you could do 3, 3, 3, and 4. And the first one and each one will have in common. The second one and each triplet will have something in common. And the third one will have something in common. What's in common about the third one each time, and now we're up to Choshech, which is number 9, because Makot Bechor is 10th and final. So the third one each time, there's no warning. There's a warning for the first two in each group, and there's never a warning by the third one, which some will say that the third one is in fact a punishment for ignoring the first two. So now we're up to number 9. Here we don't anticipate a warning. There is no warning. So therefore, instead of God saying, okay, we've said this before as well. The way that Rabbi Soloveitchik loved to drive us crazy would be to ask us, so what should it say next? So what should it say next? Again, this goes to context. If you look at the majority of the plagues, what should go next? God should say to Moshe, go and warn Paro. But again, if you look at it and you've noticed that there's actually a system taking place, so then what we would expect is no warning to Paro, and that's what we find. Which means, do it, but there's no warning. And of course now the challenge is going to be, what choshech afeila means, for that matter, in the previous verse, vayamesh choshech. The rabbis in various places, both the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, beginning of Psachim, other places, talk about what kind of darkness was this. They say it's a darkness which can be felt, which is different from a darkness where just it becomes difficult to see. Lo re'u ish et achiv, ve'lo kamu ish mitachtav shloshet yamim, ve'lechol b'nei Yisrael haya'or b'moshav tam. So when it came to the Egyptians, there was darkness. When it came to the Jews, there were light. Now, of course, I can give you a hard time again and ask you, how many of the plagues did it make a distinction between the Jews and the Egyptians? And you're going to say to me, so all of them is very good. It's the wrong answer, but it's very good. And the reason why it's very good is that you, again, this goes back to our Chumash and Rashi experience, which means there are midrashim that will say that by all of the plagues this happened. So for example, when we're kids, we're told if a Jew took water from the Nile, it would be water, but if an Egyptian took water, it would be blood. And what if the two of them were drinking from a straw? It's very romantic, from the same cup. Actually, it's not romantic at all, he went alone. If two were drinking from the same cup, out of the Jew's straw would come water, and out of the Egyptian straw would become blood. Anybody remember such a thing when you were kids, learning such a thing? It does not say that in the Chumash. But rather, this is an assumption. The assumption is that, okay, so what's the purpose of the plagues? Now, we do find specifically by some of the plagues a distinction. So, for example, and again, your homework is going to be, go ahead and take a look at all 10 plagues and take a look which one it actually says that there was distinction, which one it doesn't. Along the way, you're going to get some hints about that. But I can assure you it doesn't say it by all of them. That doesn't mean that there aren't perhaps indications the other way, but it doesn't say it. But over here we're told clearly that for the Egyptians there's darkness, for the Jews there's light. Now, light and darkness is sometimes more than simply ease of being able to see what's in front of you, which means darkness is something which I think includes certain fears. I'm not sure if we should throw primordial into that sentence. We can if you like. Light, I mean, just imagine for yourselves walking down a street, the same exact street, when the sun is shining or when it's the middle of the night and it's pitch black. Is that the same experience walking down that street, right? One is going to be something, you know, you're almost like, okay, it's nice, the sun is shining, everything is good, and the other is going to be time of fear and concern because the darkness is something which is a little bit more frightening. So over here, when we're told that the Egyptians, you know, for 3 days have darkness and they can't move and it's paralyzing, and for the Jews, there's light. So that actually tells you, it maybe goes a long way to actually describing the feelings as well, the emotional feelings about what it was like during those 3 days. And I'm saying that so far just in terms of pshat of reading these psukim, that for the Jews, there's going to be this comfort and this almost lightness about it because the sun is shining, everything is good, but for the Egyptians there's fear and darkness. Lo re'u ish et achiv, v'lo kamu ish mitachtav shloshet yamim, v'lechol b'nei Yisrael ya'or b'moshav tam. So again, total paralysis versus the Jews having light. V'yikur paro Moshe v'yomer l'chu v'du at Hashem rak tzonchem v'rkachem yutzag kam tapchem yilechim achem. And he finally says, go. Just, you know, leave your property behind. Moshe says, no, sorry. Not only are we taking our things with us, our cattle with us, our flocks with us, he goes, you will also donate to the cause. You're going to donate to the synagogue, what do you call this, the building fund? You will be donating as well.
He
goes, we don't know exactly what it is that God will want, so we're taking everything with us. God gave him a little bit more confidence, as we discussed last week. And he just, that's it, he couldn't send them. Leave. You're not going to see me again, and next time you see me, you'll be dead. As you have said, we will not see you again. The Midrash in Shmot Rabbah gives us at least one aspect or element or how we should perhaps understand this plague. Vayet Moshe et yado al hashamayim v'choshech afila, meheichan haya choshech ahu. Where did that darkness come from? That's an interesting question. Because normally we would have imagined that darkness is just the absence of light. So over here it's asking, no, but what is the nature of this darkness? Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Nechemya, it's an argument between two different rabbis. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Michoshech Shamala, it was some kind of darkness from above, Shenemar, Yoshet Choshech Sitro Sivavotav Sukato. And I'm sure that you're quite familiar with that verse. If you're not, he made darkness his screen, dark thunderheads, dense clouds of the sky were his pavilion round about him. And no, that was not my translation. Rabbi Nechemya Omar, Rabbi Nechemya, however, said, Michoshech shel Gehenom. It was the darkness of hell. And that's also very good, because some of you may have suspected or feared that hell will have lots of fire in it, the fiery hell and so on. But again, when you don't have a body, you probably don't have to be as concerned with physical stimuli as such. Rather, it's talking about this darkness is a punishment which emanates from hell, as it were. Which means, again, that's really the point of this midrash. This is hellish. This is punishment. This is what happens to the wicked, which means this is already something which is related to this, again, concept of an ultimate midat hadin. So again, interesting question. Where does the darkness come from? This darkness came from hell. Kach harashayim shenem aviyabamach shach ma'aseyem l'ficha kadosh baruch ma'chaseleyem et tahom shu choshech shenem avachoshech apenei tahom ze gehinom haviyom achoshech shabam mitzrayim mitoch gehinom haya. Rather, it is this image of the Egyptians falling into an abyss, falling and falling and falling into the depths of whatever is beneath earth, again, far below. And that's also a theme which we find, which we represented by at least some verses in Tanakh. So therefore, what we get over here is total midat hadin, total punishment, and that's this darkness, which means, just to say it simply in one sentence now, that according to the Midrash and Midrash Rabbah, the punishment of darkness is a foretaste or a little bit of a taste, foreshadowing of the eventual punishment of hell, which is coming towards the Egyptians. Okay, that is the opinion that we find over here of Rabbi Nechemya. Now, there's a Mechilton source number three, which can easily mislead us, and I'm about to mislead you, so I have to warn you that I don't want to mislead you, because it's going to talk about the darkness, and talk about the Egyptians, and going to talk about the Jews. And it's going to bring our verse, which is really why it's going to mislead us, but it's not talking about this episode. It's talking about something which is going to happen approximately a week further, a little more. It's going to happen the night before the splitting of the sea. And there's going to be these clouds and so on and things which separate between the Jewish camp and between the camp of the Egyptians. So again, just notice the context. Source number three in the Mechilta. V'yavo bein machane Mitzrayim u'bein machane Yisrael v'yihi anan v'choshech. So there also it speaks about a cloud and darkness. Hanan al Yisrael, there was a cloud, which now we can add another term, a protective cloud, anan yakavod, a protective cloud for the Jews, v'choshech al Mitzrayim. And on Egypt, there was darkness. So again, this is what the Michilta is about to tell us, is the darkness, okay, El, that the darkness which is experienced there is the same darkness which goes back to the plague. Magida katuv sheYisrael netunim ba'ora, that the Jews were enjoying the light, umitzrayim ba'afela, umitzrim, I'm not sure, ba'afela, Shenemar lo ru'u ish et achiv v'lo komu ish mitachtav shloshit yamim. So it's very interesting that the verse that it uses as its proof is actually a verse which goes back to the plague of darkness. And of course, during the plague of darkness, the Torah told us that it was going to be dark for the Egyptians and it was light for the Jews. V'chein atamotze latid lavo. Not only did this happen in Egypt and it happens again by the sea, it's going to happen again in the future. Harehu omer kumi uri ki va'orech v'kavod Hashem alayach zarach. That again, it's this concept that the Jews will have light, and light has to do with happiness and celebration and clarity. And again, it's freedom versus darkness, which is oppressive. And therefore, presumably, the punishment for oppressing the Jews is one that you get oppressed by darkness. Prima hine achoshech se'eretz v'arafel le'umim v'alayach zerach Hashem u'kvodo alayach yirev lo od, ela kol mishuhu natun ba'afila ro'eh kol mishuhu natun ba'ora she'ayu mitzrayim shruim ba'afila ro'im et Yisrael she'yunim ba'ora ochlim v'shotim v'smechim v'yum mezarikim b'hem b'chetzim u'v'nei b'listera. So what it just now told us, again, is something which I think is fascinating. It's telling us that the Egyptians were stuck in darkness, but in their darkness, they had what maybe for some of you would be like a television or a window, and they see the Jews on the other side in light, celebrating and happy and so on. So they're paralyzed in their darkness, but not only are the Jews in light, they see it, which means they realize the distinction which is taking place between the two. So again, I don't want to mislead you into saying that this is a description of what took place during the plague of darkness, but this is a description which took place during a second event where there was light and there was darkness, and it's telling us about not only the distinction between the two, but that one more element, that one extra element is, meaning it's one thing to be stuck in your darkness and your difficulty and life is tough and so on, but what makes it worse? When someone else is happy. I mean, that's what drives you crazy. It's bad enough that you, right, if everybody else has a bad time like you, it's one thing. But if there are other people that are celebrating and happy, and certainly if the other people celebrating are your former slaves, and they're the ones who are happy and eating, and there's a party going down, and you're there, again, completely paralyzed. So these elements, as I said, is as described over here by the Mechilta, regarding a future event. On the other hand, there's a second mechilta, which is going to cause us our problems for today. Source number four, and it revolves around something which we've spoken about in the past. V'hayaki yomer lechem b'neichem, what's the continuation of that? Ma'avod ha'zot lechem. That's the person who is described by Rashi as being the Ben Rasha, also based upon a source in both the Yerushalmi and the Mechilta. Bisara ra'a nitbasru Yisrael botosha'a. They got a really bad message at that moment. Shesofa Torah atidah lehistakach, that the Torah will one day be forgotten. Where did they get that message from? Because they're just told that children, grandchildren, future generations are going to say, Ma'avodah zot lachem. What is this? What is this stuff that you people are doing? I want to pause there for a second. Again, just in case you get nothing else out of today, I want to say something I've said before, and maybe this time it will penetrate. It's you could say it over in Pesach night in 1 minute. It doesn't take that much longer. It says that your children are going to say to you, right? And what's the answer? Zevach Pesach. This is the Passover offering. And then at the end of that section, it says, and all the Jews bowed down out of... So that's really the question of the Mechilta. What was that experience of bowing down? So again, those of you who have no idea what I'm talking about, in Perek Yud Bet, it talks about celebration of Pesach in Mitzrayim. So we know that when we're in Egypt, this is what we do. But along the way, God tells Moshe, this is not a one-time experience. Pesach is going to be experienced year after year. This is what we are going to do. And it goes on to explain about, again, the whole holiday of Pesach. In Perek Yud Bet, Pasuk Kav Vav, it says, V'hayo ki yomer leich b'neichem avodah zot lechem, when your children ask you about this. Now, this is the problem. And there's two ways of reading this. And what's beautiful about the two ways of reading it, they may not be contradictory. One way of reading it is what I just now read in the Mechilta, saying, oh my God, we're going to go down a couple of generations and our children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren won't even know about leaving Egypt. There was an article, was it a Newsweek this week, about the percentage of Americans who don't believe that 6 million Jews were killed in the Holocaust. What percentage was that? A disturbing percentage it was. 46%. Of millennials in America, millennials who did not believe 6 million were killed. Which means maybe something happened, maybe it was less, but you go down a couple of generations. And I'm willing to guarantee, absolutely guarantee, that a percentage of those are Jews as well. Right? Now, there's a curse and there's a blessing in this. So that's what I'm saying. It's two sides of the same coin. One side of it, the negative, which I think you've all already are connected to, that how could it possibly be a couple of generations onward that Jews are no longer going to remember what took place? How could it be that Jews will not remember? Now, you can fill in the blank. They won't remember the Holocaust. They won't remember that we were slaves in Egypt. I mean, how much of the Torah is focused on that point to remember that we were slaves in Egypt, and now we're being told? And when your kids ask you, what's this Pesach all about? And that's a devastating question, which is the context of our Mechilta. There's also a positive thing about this, and I believe, and again, what's Pshat? I believe Pshat is based on context. I believe in context, for us, it's a devastating question. I believe that for the Jews who were in Egypt at the time, it was unbelievable. Because again, what did it say? Let me go back one more pasuk. V'yoki tavo al ha'aretz asher yiten Hashem lachem. When you're going to get to your land, which God is going to give you, kasher diber, right, as God has said, u'shmartim atvodah zot, you're going to keep doing the Passover service. When the kids ask you, what is this? So if you really believe, now let's go back again, context. Who are you? You're a slave in Egypt. Your parents were slaves. Your grandparents were slaves. You've been slaves. All your cousins are slaves. You've been slaves as long as you know. And now Moshe just now said something to you. He said, when we leave here, we're going to go to the land that God has promised. They believe that. And when we get there, we're going to build our homes, we're going to build our country, and it could be that our children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren won't know what Pesach is, and won't know what Egypt was, won't know what slavery is. Now, for all of us, that's devastating. Can you imagine in Auschwitz in 1944, somebody saying, I had a dream, God came to me, and your grandchildren are going to be Israelis, they're going to have their own country, and they're going to be born in freedom. And they're not going to connect to the past. Now, I understand the difficulty in that. My grandchildren, first of all, are going to live, they're going to survive, they're not going to be slaves, they're going to be in their own land, we're going to have a country. And now the whole big problem I have is to get a little bit of education to teach them about the past. I'll take it any day of the week. Yes? Would you trade Auschwitz for an uneducated grandchild? Any day of the week. And he's there at the Pesach Seder. And he's just asking, so what is this? So if these parents now believe at that moment, what's the continuation of this pasuk right afterwards? It says, V'amartim, so you tell the kids, you tell the grandchildren, Zevach Pesach L'Hashem, this is the Passover service, Asher Pesach al Batei Yisrael, B'mitzrayim b'nikvot Mitzrayim, that V'et Bateinu Hitzil. Again, another distinction between the Jews and the Egyptians, when it came to that final plague that God passed over, literally passed over the homes of the Jews, and he killed the Egyptian firstborn, we were all slaved, and what's the response of the Jews when they hear this? It says, V'yikod ha'am v'yishtachavu. They bowed down and they were totally, totally happy. Now, it's interesting. Rashi a moment ago told us that this is the Ben Rasha. This is the Ben Rasha. This is the Rasha who says, Mavo dezot lachem. Because for us to read it from where we are today, that's a Ben Rasha. Nonetheless, Rashi writes, when they all bowed down, he writes, sorry. Yes, Pasuk of Zion, he says that they bowed down Al Bisarot Hagu'ula, because they were just now given information, they were just now informed there will be redemption, Ubiya Ta'aretz, and they were just now told that they're entering the land of Israel, Ubisarot HaBanim Shiulahem, and they were just now told about the children they were going to have. Rashi knows what's the Pshat. What's Pshat over here? But by the way, Rashi right here in context doesn't say it to Ben Rasha. Later on he goes back and says, oh, that Pasuk refers to the Rasha. But Pshat right over here? What did Rashi just now say? That people are overjoyed. They're overjoyed that they're going to leave, there's going to be redemption, they're overjoyed they're going to get their land, they're overjoyed they're going to have children like this. They're overjoyed they're going to have somebody who we consider to be a Rasha. Again, just think about it for a second, but it goes back to context. When you're in the middle of Egypt, in the middle of Auschwitz, being told that you're going to have a child who's going to be free is already an unbelievable message. Now let's go back to our Mechilta, and I think we can understand a little bit better. Source number four. V'yoki yomer lechem b'neichem, that's our pasuk, B'sara ra'a nitbasu Yisrael b'oto sha'a. What a terrible message they just now got. Shesofa Torah tida l'shtakach. Because they're just being told their kids are not going to know about Torah. They're not going to know about history. They're not going to know who they are. V'yesh omrim, and some people say, B'sara tova nitbasu Yisrael b'oto sha'a. They were given an incredible message at that moment. They're going to see their children and their grandchildren, and I'm adding in now, with freedom and so on. And as it says, and they all celebrated, which means the point that to say that they were actually happy and they got good news is evidenced by the next pasuk that says that they bow down. You know, again, this response of what an unbelievable message. Echod michamisha. That's strange. And we're going to come back to this. Because they were told that they're going to go out chamushim. And chamushim, the Michilta says, is 1 in 5. V'yesha omrim, and some people say, echod michamishim, 1 out of 50 left. V'yesha omrim, echod michameshmot, and some people say, 1 out of 500 left. Rav Nuhurai omer ha'avoda v'lo echad michamesh me'ot alu, and so on. Now this mechilta is incredibly disturbing. Because this mechilta started out okay, actually it had the negative and then had the positive. And then along the way over here, it starts with this teaching, which I suspect a lot of us are aware of, that when it came to the percentage of those that left, it starts posing questions on what percentage it actually was. Was it 1 in 5? Was it 20%? But maybe it was 1 in 50, maybe it was 1 in 500. But part of the question is, held it, how do we get to such numbers in the first place? So it must have been miraculous births. But you also hear something very negative. If each pregnancy had 6 kids, that's wonderful. 5 of them never made it out, or 1 in 5 never made it out. So then what is this whole enterprise that we're dealing with? And the Michilta ends up saying, but there was happiness. Why was there happiness? The happiness was because when the people, the other, depending, at least 80%, and then it goes up from there, when they died, the Egyptians didn't see it. The Egyptians were in darkness. The Egyptians weren't aware. So that means that, as opposed to the Mechilta that I brought you before, that states that the Egyptians in their darkness can see the Jews celebrating, over here the Mechilta says that during these days of darkness, the Jews were actually suffering through a catastrophic Holocaust whereby they've lost at least 80% of their people, and maybe percentages far higher than that. And this is why they were thankful, because at least the Egyptians didn't see it. So I'm saying, I'll just say one thing. What? Like where is this coming from? Now, let's take a look at Rashi. Let's take a look at Rashi in source number 5. V'choshech afela. There was this incredible darkness. Shloshit yamim, choshech shel ofel, shelo ro'u ish et achiv otan gimel yamim shlosha yamim. They couldn't see one another. For od shlosha yamim, choshech mechupal al zeh. And then it got more severe, another 3 days, shelo kamu ish mitachtav, where there was this total paralysis. Yoshev en yichol amod, v'amod en yichol yishev, v'lo mavi alem choshech. And why did God bring about darkness? I have to stop here for a second. You realize we could have asked this question 9 other times, right? Well, why did God bring frogs? Right? Do you remember that question being asked? Why did God bring, right? Kinim, still. V'lama hivi aleim choshech. So sometimes you ask a question because you want to give an answer, but we have to pay attention. Rashi asked a question which we're not sure we understand it. Because in that generation there were wicked Jews, and now we're told what their wickedness was. The wickedness was they did not want to leave. Their wickedness was, and here goes, an unpaid service announcement for the Zionist enterprise, is that they're supposed to leave, and again, let's remember something. The itinerary never really told them about 40 days in the desert. There was only a passing reference to serving God in this 40 years in the desert. There's only a passing reference to, yeah, we'll stop at some place along the way, but the destination is clear. The place which flows, right? Eretz Zavat Chalav U'Dvash, the land of Israel, that's where they're going. Which means those who wanted to stay essentially said, we'd rather stay in Egypt, no matter what the circumstances are, rather than go and be our own free people in the land of Israel, because there's all sorts of fright and things involved in it. So what is the mechil to label such people? These are the wicked people, and therefore these wicked people needed to die because they were not willing to leave. We'll see some of the commentaries even make this worse, but let's stay there for a moment. Umetu b'shloshet me'afila, and these people died during the 3 days of darkness. Kadesh shelo yiru Mitzrayim b'mapalatan, in order that the Egyptians not cease. And he realized that Rashi, to a very great extent, is really internalizing this teaching that we found in the Mechilta, and it is in other places as well. V'yomru avhem lokum kamanu. So, in order that the Egyptians not be able to say, "Oh, look, you know, there's some kind of crazy nature going, you know, force of nature going on over here, because the Jews are suffering and we're suffering." V'od Shechipsu Yisrael v'ra'u et kelehen. And here's a second thing that Rashi says happened during the plague of darkness, which means Rashi's going back to his question. What was his question? Why darkness? And then Rashi says, oh, and I'll tell you another reason why darkness. That the Jews broke into the homes of the Egyptians while they were dark and paralyzed, and of course the Jews can see because that's what we were told, although that's going a little further, because I think what the Chumash had said is that there was light for the Jews b'moshevotam, where they lived, and where the Egyptians lived there was darkness, but now it's going back to our cup of water, right, or the two straws, and saying, no, but when a Jew walked into a house of an Egyptian, he was able to see. So what was the purpose of this? Well, very simple, that when they leave, they're going to be taking all kinds of things with them. But then, again, now here's where it gets interesting. We're not going to steal. Why? Because we're Jews. We don't steal. We don't do things like that. Right, all kinds of things Jews don't do. We don't steal. We don't kill. We threaten we're going to kill. Right, we don't kill. What else don't we do? Actually, a lot of things we don't do. We've learned how to do over the years. So let's go back, and we walk in. We case the joint. We look where they're hiding all of their things, and when we're about to leave, we say to them, you know, can I have that? And they say, oh, I don't have that. And, oh yeah, you do, it's right over there behind that thing. And how do we know? Because we were there. Now, first of all, this is really interesting because this commentary of Rashi seems to go directly against the Psukim in the Torah, where it says that you will find favor in their eyes and they're going to give you things. So why have a lack of faith in such a case and say, no, they're going to give you things, but here we're just helping them make sure they give us the right things. So therefore, Rashi just now provided us two reasons why we need a plague of darkness. One, to kill the Jews, and two, while all the Jews are dying, then the Jews can break into the houses of the Egyptians. And I hope you realize that this is a very strange commentary. And the commentaries on Rashi, which are also, there's quite a few, they don't have an easy time with this. In 6 and 7 and 12 and 13, these are all commentaries on Rashi's Sfarim that were written on Rashi. The Bar Tanura in source number 6, he writes, Yesh lo mishakashalo, d'mechivin t'kol ha-makot kulam ba'u ba'avur harodcha et kochi u'leman yir'u ashe yifla Hashem bein Mitzrayim u'bein Yisrael l'meviya le'yem ha-kazu shelo yu yucholim l'havchin bein Yisrael lokim kamotam imlav. Now that's making an assumption. I'll translate. He said, isn't the purpose of all of the plagues in order to see the power of God, by the way, I should have stopped there, and in order to know and to understand and to appreciate the distinction between the Jews and the Egyptians? This goes back, built on the assumption that a plague like Dam, for example, struck both, which I'm going to say it again. It doesn't necessarily in the Chumash. He's assuming that this is the case. One second. He's assuming that this is the case, and therefore he's saying the purpose of the plagues is that they should see the power of God and the distinction between the Jews and the Egyptians, and therefore in darkness they can't see anything. That's why Rashi is asking, why a plague of darkness? Because they can't see. Again, if I go back to the Mechilta, that they can't see anything, but they can see the Jews celebrating, so then it would work. But we don't have that Mechilta in this case. We have that only later on, the night before the leaving, the splitting of the sea.
You don't need to have that assumption in order to say that
Right, but that, but again, he's trying to understand Rashi's question of why choshech. He's trying to explain the question. I don't need a broader interpretation. Why this plague? Because it sounds like actually a funny question when I compare it to all the other plagues. The Taz, Divrei David is the Taz, the commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, with David Halevi. He writes in source number 7, V'tirutz tebekavano haya be'emet, ken kedei shelo yir'u Mitzrayim mitat rishai Yisrael. Again, the purpose really was in order to not to see the Jews die. And he goes back to the second point. Remember Rashi had said earlier, there's two types of darkness. One for 3 days was dark, and then for 3 days there was paralysis. He says that's what forced Rashi to say that there was two different things. Why darkness, and one is for the Jews to die, and two for them to come into the house, because there's two types of darkness. Which means that he's saying is that when they're paralyzed, you can walk into their homes, look towards the end of that source. That they were so paralyzed and all of their senses broke down, they weren't even be able to tell that there was a robber in their house. By the way, I would have said the opposite would have been good. If you're completely paralyzed and you know that somebody's breaking into your house, I think that would be even more scary. But again, I'm just pointing out that they're working hard to explain why Rashi even asked that question in the first place. Now, I could have given a different answer for Rashi, why darkness. And this also we've discussed in the past, so we're just going to touch this for a second. What's the common denominator of all three plagues in this week's parasha? There is a common denominator, so we will say this in terms of theology, and maybe even those of you who like Kabbalistic concepts, we can make believe it's Kabbalistic. There are 10 statements which create the world, right? In Kabbalah, there are 10 sefirot, the 3 higher sefirot and then the 7 lower sefirot. Those of you who have no idea what I'm talking about, just sort of shake your head like this, and we're all good. The highest sefirot are presumably before creation, and they also have to do with the upper world. The lower 7 sefirot, those are actually represented by different people, and those are the people who are our guests, our ushpizin. Therefore, Avram and so on represent, going down to David and Malchut, those represent the lower sefirot. So you have 3 and 7. In last week's parasha, we had 7 plagues. In this week's parasha, we have 3 plagues. Right? All the kids were taught when they were very young that in Parashat Va'era, Vav and Aleph, 6 and 1 equals 7, and Bo, 2 and 1 equals 3, and that's how you remember. 7 last week's, and okay, so now you know that as well. So 7 in last week's Parsha and 3 in this week's Parsha. But again, I'm asking, but what's the common denominator of the plagues in this week's Parsha? And the answer is that in this week's Parsha, all 3 plagues have one common denominator, and they all have to do with darkness. Which means that when they're struck with, what's the first one this week? But really the first one this week? Locusts. It says the locusts will be so intense that it will cover et ein ha'aretz, and no one will be able to see. Which means the locust caused darkness. That's number one, darkness. 1 second. The second plague in this week's parasha is darkness, and darkness caused darkness. And the third plague in this week's parasha is actually different from the other plagues because it takes place in the middle of the night when there is darkness, which means that the common denominator of all three is darkness. Now, what does that make a difference? So now go back to your mythology. Paro, among his various titles, and Paro had many titles, one of them was that he was the sun god. So if the sun god gets eclipsed, that is a major theological problem for the Egyptians. Now, what's really interesting about this is that Rashi seems to know this. Now, I hope that didn't sound terrible, but Rashi knows it, and he'll tell you he knows it from a cliché, that he didn't see this inside, but he heard something about it. So take a look at source number 8, because this would have answered his question that he had asked himself, why darkness? Because of the sun god. Source number 8, Ra'u ki ra'an neged p'nechem. Paro says, finally, fine, you guys can go, but something really bad is going to happen to you. Ki ra'a neged p'nechem. Ki targumo. U'midrash agada shamati. You notice that? Midrash agada shamati. Rashi is very specific when he has seen things versus when he heard something. Over here he said, I heard something. ומדרש אגדה שמעתי, כוכב יש, כוכב אחד יש, ששמו רעה. There's something called Ra. What is Ra? The sun god. Rashi here is talking about the sun god. Rashi is saying, Paro is saying to you, yeah, you guys can go, because you've been beating me up too much, but the sun god is going to catch up with you. By the way, you can go, but the sun god will catch up with you. Pay attention to what Rashi writes here. And again, I'm not going to say that Rashi, you know, Rashi is not the Rambam. He hasn't sit and read all the books of mythology. He's telling us, I heard about this. Kochav echad yeh sheshmo ra'a, omu lem paro, re'eni ba'atztaginyot sheli, oto kochav ola lekratam b'midbar. That power is going to come after you in the desert. V'usiman dam b'harigah, and it's going to cause all kinds of bloodshed and death. U'kishachatu yisro be'egel, b'kesh ha'kodesh baruch l'horgam, and when the Jews actually sinned in with the golden calf, Omar Moshe b'tfilato, lama yomu b'mitzrayim, le'mor bira'ahotziyam, that Rashi just now turned Moshe's prayer. If you do something to the Jews, they're going to say that Ra got them, and you're going to be doing a Chilul Hashem. One second, is that unbelievable? Is this going to now go in the tours of the... Yes? Okay. So I could have answered Rashi's question, why the plague of darkness? Again, because if I know that there is a sun god... See, what's also interesting about this is what happens in terms of the actual leaving. Yes, yes, yes. What's actually interesting is when they leave. We have three plagues in this week's parasha that all have the common denominator of darkness. In the middle of the night, the firstborn are struck, and Paro says, leave. The Jews don't leave towards the morning. Why do they leave in the morning? They leave when the sun is shining. So as not to say, you can only leave when the sun is eclipsed, when the sun is down, and so on. No, we're leaving when the sun is shining, that's when we're walking out. Now, we're not going there. I'm just saying I could have answered Rashi's question, why the plague of darkness? I'm just saying Rashi himself could have answered this question in a different manner instead of saying, oh, we needed darkness to go kill a whole bunch of Jews. So I'm just saying is that I'm still having difficulty with this. Let's move on a little bit. In source number 9, we're going to have the pasuk that was referenced earlier by the Mechilta. God took them around in a roundabout way instead of the most direct way. And they left Eretz Yisrael chamushim. Now, I hope every person here knows what the word chamushim means. This actually goes back. This was the conversation that took place by our Shabbos table last week. What is pshat, the word chamushim? Well, let's take a look at Rashi in source 11. V'chamushim, ein chamushim ela mizuyanim. They were armed. Chamush means you're armed. And Rashi goes on to say, they were armed. Now, just because, if you go back to the context, God says, I'm going to take them a roundabout way because they're really not ready for war. But who knows they're not ready for war? God knows they're not ready for war. They think they're ready for war. But God knows they're not. And a matter of fact, what kind of weapons do they have? Most likely more primitive weapons. What does the Egyptian war machine have? They have their tanks, right? They have the Merkava. So therefore, the Merkava versus whatever arms, God knows this is not a good idea and wants to take them away in order to avoid the actual conflict and battle. Rashi will go on a little bit later on, a second line from the bottom, Mizurazin. That you can also say that Chamushim could somehow mean that they went quickly. So for Rashi, or for two interpretations. One, it means they're armed, and one means quickly. And he brings some kind of evidence. Vizarez, Dover Acher. And then Rashi has a third interpretation. Chamushim, Echod Mechamisha Yatsu, Va'arba Chalakim Meitu B'Shloshet Yemei Afela. That there's a third interpretation Rashi offers, and that is that only 1 in 5 left, and again, 80% died during the 3 days of darkness, which again, Rashi over here seems to recognize that it's not necessarily pshat. He tells you what pshat is, then he gives you a second interpretation. But see, this is what I think that Rashi does sometimes. He wants to educate us to also know what Chazal said about things. And this is what the Rashbam went after him a bit on, which means Rashi will do that even if it goes against the plain meaning of the text, which means, in context here, chamushim means they left armed. Rashi is saying, yeah, but Chazal also say this.
So he wants us to know what Chazal also say, even though I'm sorry, I'm going to keep saying it, it's not pshat, but it's something which Jews should know as another interpretation. That's a very good question, so let's continue on. And not only is it a good question, it actually leads us to a little bit of an impossibility. Look at source 15, the Rashbam, again, Rashi's grandson. V'chamushim b'chlei zayin. They were armed with weapons. Shiolchim lirosh et eretz Canaan. They think, where are they going? They're going to the land of Canaan. That's where they're going. Now, the reason we had this share this week is that after last Shabbos, I looked at this a little bit, and actually I made an argument, and every word that I said, I later found in the Ibn Ezra, which one of two possibilities, I'd seen the Ibn Ezra before, or the Ibn Ezra had a good day. I don't know which one it is. And I'm just saying word for word. Incidentally, those of you who may have heard rumors that the Ibn Ezra was in London, and he was, and he actually may have been murdered there, that's a possibility. He actually was the subject of some great British writers have written about the Ibn Ezra. Now you have what to Google after class. Ibn Ezra on darkness, he says, like one sees on the Atlantic a thick darkness that you can't see. And then people say, oh, he's describing the London fog. So that's part of his, he goes, it's a darkness you can feel, you can't go through. And anyway, Ibn Ezra on darkness, and you'll see that's why people think that he saw, that he was in London on a bad day, which is, okay, I'll stop. London Loma Chakeli. The Chamushim. So first of all, he quotes a verse, and the verse that he's quoting over here has to do with stabbing somebody in the fifth rib. Chamushim, he thinks, always has to do with weapons. Also, there's another verse that has to do with five types of weapons. The Rishami understands that. And he says, V'yesh omun kitamu hatzala hachamishit. It has to do with the fifth rib. Rashi, by the way, says that on that pasuk. V'chein, and so on and so forth. The temtavu chamushim. V'drash, again, pshat is they were weapons. Drash, sha'alu achad mi'chamesh mi'ot. Davar yachid hu. V'lav machloket. I mean, some people say this, but others argue. V'eininu kabbalah klal. This is not tradition. Now, you have to be very careful about this, because he knows the mechilta. When he says that this is a singular opinion, he's saying in terms of pshat, it's an opinion. Matter of fact, he's saying it's not pshat. Ain't no Kabbalah. It's not a tradition. This is not what happened. Which means he's really firmly going against what we had learned in Rashi. V'day lanu hatzar sh'anachnu bo im chachmei Yishmael sh'heim omrum eich yitachen mi'chamisha v'chamisha zacharim sh'yolidu b'matayim v'eser shanim sheish meot elef zacharim mi'ben esrim v'neyu kefel ha'kefel am hatafa hanashim. So what the number 55 is over here, he subtracted Yaakov, he subtracted the whole first generation, and he wants to know from the other 55 people that are here, how exactly did we end up with 600,000 men between the ages of so-and-so and so-and-so? And on top of that, you would have had just as many women, and on top of that, people older, younger, whatever. He goes, I'm having a hard enough time when I have my debates with the Islamic philosophers who are saying that this rabbinic opinion is absurd, and that's only when they know about the smaller number. You're going to start bothering... that has to do with the Chumash itself. You're going to now start telling me that, oh, no, in reality, there was... Again, you decide. It was times 80%, it was times 800%, it was times 1,000%. Meaning, how in the world am I supposed to explain this logically? And the Ibn Ezra is saying, and we really do need to be logical at some point, and just stop with this preposterous interpretation. So I hope I didn't put any words in his mouth, but he's saying the math doesn't work. And even if you're going to say the multiple birth, he goes, the math doesn't work. Don't make this worse than it is. And then in the whole middle over here, he tells you a little bit about how he did the math and so on. V'hinei b'makasha achla Mitzrayim v'nimla Yisrael. V'nei b'makasha achla Mitzrayim nimla Yisrael gam meit rov mikne Mitzrayim b'dever u'mikne beit Yisrael lo meit achad u'v'maka b'chorim lo meit b'Yisrael achad u'v'maka chol shechtiv l'kol b'nei Yisrael hayu or. He's saying, your interpretation over here, we have various plagues that it says specifically that Egyptians suffered and Jews didn't. And over here it says, and the Jews were light and they had darkness. How are you going to tell me? And again, he's not going on the 1 in 5. He's going on the 1 in 500. He's just saying, just please stop. Because what kind of light is this? According to you, there wasn't light. There was darkness, there was depression, and there was death. And if this is what happened, this isn't redemption. This is a Holocaust that just took place. He goes like, what are you talking about? Which is the strongest thing the Ibn Ezra can say. It's contradicted by something. What is it contradicted by? The Torah. And something which is contradicted by the Torah, you can't say. And all of this was drash. And do not rely on this. And maybe whoever said this was dealing with some kind of a mystical interpretation which has nothing to do with what the Chumash says or means. So essentially, what did the Ibn Ezra just now do? Again, if you want to argue that he's unfair because he didn't go after the 1 in 5, he went after the 1 in 500, but you saw the Mechilta at both of them. That's the more extreme. So obviously, when you debate, you go after the more extreme. But what did he do? He just now said that you can't possibly say this, that he believes that this was, in fact, preposterous. So, now let's just see what we want to do before we finish today. Source 17 and 18. 17 is the Chatam Sofer, who, going back to that verse about them being armed, he says, yeah, they were armed, but God didn't feel it was right for the Jews to fight. It was God's battle, not the Jews' battle. No, but he's saying it for a reason. He's saying, based on other psukim later on, it says, don't treat the Egyptians this way because you lived in their land. It's saying that there's a certain midah over here. There's a grandson who was Rav Shimon ben Rav Avram Shmuel ben Yom Sofer, who was killed in Auschwitz, by the way, at the age of 95. And he writes over here something which I've always thought, but again, I'm not going to go so far as to say it's pshat, but I'm bringing it because it may be important. What does the next pasuk say? That pasuk says that they left, they were armed. The next pasuk says, and Moshe carried out Yosef's remains. Uma haya, what was the arms that they had? They were the arms. What were the arms? Hainu b'masha lokach Moshe atzmot Yosef imam. L'chein Yosef atzadik magen aleim. It was Yosef's remains, which was actually the arms that they had. U'kamosha hayu nivka, Yosef. So as I'll say it again, I always felt that there was something to that, but now I found a rabbi who said it, not just a rabbi, a kadosh who said it, and we're very happy to give him credit. For the rest of the time that we have left, what do we have? We have 5 minutes or so. I want to look at a couple of comments, and not in the proper sequence even, of somebody who was a contemporary, maybe a teacher of some of the people in this room. And it's a man of Yaakov Kamenetsky. He was one of the leading rabbis in America. You see his dates, 1891 to 1986. He was the Rosh Yeshiva in Torah Vidas in New York. Easy to remember the years, 1948 to 1967. Okay, those are the years he was Rosh Yeshiva. He then retired, and quote unquote, and most of his writings come from a later point in time. He is very impressively rounded, if one looks in his svarim, in terms of knowledge of all kinds of things that maybe sometimes you wouldn't have suspected that somebody, the Rosh Yeshiva of that type of yeshiva, would have. And I hope that wasn't condescending. But, things about diktuk and things about history and things about philosophy. And he says something very interesting over here. So enough introduction, and let's read what he says. Source 19, and this is on the Makav Choshech. V'yichoshech afila b'chloritz in Tzrayim, and he cites Rashi. Hinei af shebemet kol b'nei ador ahu lo yunechshavim k'tzadikim, shrei matzinu sheta'anu malchei hasharet halalu avodei avodei zara v'alalu. Avodei avodei zara. Pause. he's saying, okay, you want to work on a midrashic level? Let's go there. When we get to the splitting of the sea, again, the night before the Mechilta said that there was darkness here and there was light there, nonetheless, the angels came and said, these people are idolaters and these people are idolaters. Now you want, and I can go further. And what about all the mistakes that were made throughout the desert afterwards? Very soon they're worshiping a golden calf and on and on and on. And it's easy, we could blame the Erev Rav for everything. But nonetheless, he's asking, you're telling me that the 80%, the bad ones, died already. The good ones don't look all that good. Which means, what exactly are you saying? The angels are complaining that these people are idolaters. Why are you splitting the sea for them? Haresha HaMalachim lo hayucholim l'ra'ot shum hevdel ben Yisrael l'Mitzrayim. Now, I just want, again, just in case you're going to get confused or you'll think that I got confused, I stopped already the shir with the Ibn Ezra. That was done. That's it. This isn't pshat that all these people died. The Ibn Ezra's complaints are correct. But nonetheless, what's the meaning behind it? What is this teaching? What is this all about? So let's continue now, because he's saying, again, if you want to go there, let's understand. Vimkein madua meitu dafka rishaim elu v'lo kol rishaim. So if you want to say that the Jews were still wicked by the splitting of the sea, but those were wicked, so what's the difference between those wicked versus these wicked? I'm going to read what he says, and then I'm going to give you my unfair read into it. V'nira mishum she'elu, remember what the Mechilta actually said? They didn't want to leave. Remember that? Mishum she'elu ayirotzim la'akev biyadehem shel acherim milatzeit. They wanted to prevent others from leaving. It's again, very, very subtle, but it's very, very different. He's saying that they felt we cannot leave Egypt. Why? That we have a tradition that we're supposed to be slaves for 400 years. How do we have the right to end the slavery earlier? You said it, I didn't have to say it? Am I right? Yeah? Im kein adayin lo higia zman haketz. The time for the redemption hasn't come yet. Upachadush im yotzu kodim azman, az yi'arelahim kamo shirah l'bnei Ephraim. There is this tradition that certain people try to go earlier, shiyotzu kodim azman. V'lo yiminu l'divrei Moshe. Anybody who has such an approach doesn't believe Moshe v'azikeinim shechishev Hashem et haketz b'schut avot, that God decided to count in a creative fashion. U'lechein himitan HaKadosh Baruch Hu. God killed them. So do you hear what he said? I'm going to blame everything on you now. Wow. I'm blaming everything on you today now. Do you hear what he said? Okay, go back into a man who lives in the 20th century. He's a young man who learns in Slobodka. He ends up coming to Toronto, then he goes to America. And he's looking at this and he's saying that God is able to speed up a process. And there are those who say, no, God can't speed up the process. And he goes, and those are the people who try to stop others from going to the land of Israel. So you read this into a 20th century context, you just now have identified, again, you want to call them Satim or Naturi Karta, and he just called them the type of wicked who should have died during the 3 days, which is an unbelievable statement if you're going to go and read this into a 20th century context. But I'm saying that isn't correct, because again, what's the claim of those who are going in? They're also idolaters. Which means the Jews who entered into... I'm sorry, I apologize, but I get the right because I sit here. So the Jews who came into Israel, they're not religious, and therefore they have no right. They're over the Avodah Zarah. They have no right to be here and so on. And the ones who were staying behind, the tzaddikim, and saying, no, you can't go, and God said we have to stay, and this is the will of God. So guess what? Guess who has the final authority in determining the will of God? God. Okay? And God decided that it's time, and for whatever the reason is, God decides that it's time. And I'm saying this reading on this, I think, is unbelievable. He continues and he says, "Avalakal kulo afshe b'nei malachim hayu begeder over the avodah zara." And he goes, "What's really interesting is the malachim. Who are the malachim?" So the malach again. I'm reading back. Who are the malachim? People look at them. Tzadik. Who are these people? These people avodah zara. Of Raka Kadosh Baruch Hu yesh lo hariya limerchok lahavin sha'umazu.
God
God can look at these people and say, yeah, they're over the Avodah Zarah today, but I know what they're capable of. Which means you want to judge them where they are right now? I don't. I know that they'll be capable of all kinds of unbelievable things. And now he went back to Yosef. Again, they're armed, and the Aaron from Yosef is going with them as they split the sea. Those of you, again, who don't remember, there's a wonderful teaching which says, Vayar Hayam Vayanas. The sea saw, not a seesaw, the sea saw Vayanas and ran away. So the Medrash says, Bishut Yosef, what happened by Yosef? Vayanas Vayaratzachutza. That Eshet Potiphar hit on him and he ran outside. That the splitting of the sea was Bishut Yosef. How would I say that? That Yosef was a 17-year-old, raging hormones, what else do you want to say, a slave who this would be a really good career move for him to make friends with the woman of the house. Instead, he runs away. He's going to be thrown in prison. He doesn't know Paro is going to have a dream. That could be the end of his life. He spends the rest of his life in prison because he made a moral choice. And nonetheless, so Yosef goes against what could be called human nature. So God looks at the sea, who doesn't want to split, and says to the sea, time to go against your nature because Yosef is here. Bishut Yosef, the sea gets split. And that's the depth of the idea, but listen to the way that he's going to say it now. V'nitzayerna l'atzmenu, first he has to say this. He goes, I want you to imagine the days of darkness. Ma'hita hargashatam shel b'nei Yisrael b'meshech yimei makat ha'choshech. Those of you who weren't sure that he was talking about 20th century events, he goes, can you imagine how they felt during the time of darkness? The Jews are looking and saying, we're being hurt more than the evil enemy is. And the Jews had no idea what happened. And certainly there were many who were questioning, what did God do to? He says that's what Jews are experiencing. Again, he's talking today. He's talking 20th century. He's talking about the Holocaust. And Jews are looking and saying, what happened? How were 6 million killed? How were a third of our people killed? And we have no idea what happened. And why are the wicked Nazis, you know, what is going on? Yeah, they'll get their punishment eventually, but what's going on here? And he says, it's a sign that Geula is very, very close. He goes, because what happened then? This was almost right before they left Egypt. We're very, very close. So I'm going to say it again, just in case you weren't sure along the way over here, how much he's really talking about 20th century versus 4,000 years ago, it sounds very much, and now let's go back to Yosef. And this is a previous comment that he had already said, which is why he referenced it, but we didn't know why. V'yikach Moshe et atzmot Yosef imo. And it's also interesting and important, when does Moshe take the remains of Yosef? At which juncture does he take it? He takes it when everybody else is going and collecting the materials from, right, the taking the gold and the silver and the clothes and so on. That he felt this was a more important mitzvah to fulfill the vow to Yosef, and we'll skip a little bit where it's underlined. Okay, line before. Shimon ish kitron omer bizchut atzmot sheYosef nikra lehem hayam liYisrael hu dichtiv hayam ra'av yanas bizchut veyazavo begdo vayanas ayin sham. Ubiur divrei hamidrash mistaber mishum shebemet hanisa hazu haita misirut nefesh mamash. And this is what I said before, that because of this, Yosef is going to end up potentially being in prison for the rest of his life, and that's what he says in the next couple of lines. Skip a little bit more. Ve'ilu lo hayo hochachot she'anu nishtanenu mikol uma v'lashon lo haita yichola midat harachem lo mibnei midat hadin ko yichol ve'eifo motzanu zot v'nisyono she Yosef.
Again,
exactly what I said before. Yosef at 17 years old can stand against his raging hormones. But Yosef Devar Azeh, Harei Shelo Hisiga Sheyis Shaneb Efshariyut Adam La'amod B'Nisyon Zu V'kan Hara Kadosh Baruch Hu L'midat Adin Shenishtanenu Mikol Uma V'Lashon V'afilu Im Ovdei Avodah Zarahim Aval Toch Tochicham Mimakor Echad Nechtzav. Let me explain what he's saying. According to Rabbi Yaakov, the Jews are accused of being like everybody else. They're Ovdei Avodah Zarah. They don't deserve to leave. And he points at Yosef and says, who would have suspected Yosef? Well, by the way, Yosef is attacked a lot for what he looks like on the outside. He's an Egyptian and so on. Who would have suspected that deep inside of Yosef is this resolve, is this decency, is this holiness, to be able to withstand all kinds of temptation and to have that moral fortitude to turn around and walk away? So when the angels are pointing at the Jews and saying, look at them, they're Ovdei Avodah Zarah, he says, here, take a look. This is Yosef. He's one of them. There's something over here that you don't see, that the angels can't see, that God says, but I see. And therefore, right now, they're Ovdei Avodah Zarah, or right now, they look this way, or right now, they're not religious, or right now, they don't keep this, or right now, they're secular Israelis, or right now, you don't see something there. There's Mesirut Nefesh within them. There is this holiness within them. God says, I know. 7 weeks, they'll be standing at Har Sinai and they'll be saying Naaseh V'Nishma, and you're ready to kill them now just because they're not ready. The only ones, God says, that I'm ready to kill, according to Rabbi Yaakov, are the ones who want to stop the others from coming back and being a part of this enterprise. The ones who want to stay behind, those are the ones I don't have any, because they don't believe in the future. The ones who believe, they're the ones who are coming. It doesn't make a difference what they're doing right now. It doesn't make a difference the level they're on right now. Those are the ones who died during the times of darkness. But the other ones, don't get fooled what they look like. Those other ones are capable of unbelievable mesirut nefesh on the one side, self-sacrifice. And isn't that true? On the other hand, Kodesh Baruch Hu says, I know what's inside them. They're capable of saying, Naaseh V'Nishma. They're capable of things that you simply don't see.